When, in 1646, the founder of the Ashmolean Library recorded that he had been made a Freemason at Warrington, or when, some 5 decades later, the architects, contractors, and superintendents of works engaged upon the reconstruction of the Metropolitan Cathedral foregathered after their day's work in Masonic assemblies of another character at the Goose and Gridiron Tavern in St. Paul's Churchyard, no one was likely to have foreseen that during the ensuing 2 centuries, and out of the then exiguous community of Freemasons, the enormous Masonic organization that now flourishes in our midst would have sprung into being. At the present moment, holding warrants from the central authority, the Grand Lodge of England, alone, there exist roughly some 3,000 Masonic lodges with an estimated aggregate membership of 150,000. The Scottish and Irish divisions of Great Britain work under separate constitutions of their own, but upon similar lines to the English, whilst the British dependencies, the United States, and every other civilized country in the world, with the exception of Japan, contain Masonic organizations, the total membership of which constitutes a great multitude which there is no opportunity of numbering, and which is annually increasing. It is thus obvious that the Masonic idea has caught and continues to hold a firm grip upon the imaginations of a very considerable body of humanity, and that distinction of race and language has proved no bar to a universal appreciation of it. The inwardness of the phenomenon passes unobserved even within the Masonic community itself, although the external fact of the diffusion of the Masonic system throughout the world is, of course, not merely notorious, but is one of which large and agreeable advantage is taken by members of the fraternity, and it may be profitable to accord a brief consideration to it here, and to inquire what is the secret of the wide appeal Freemasonry has made during the last couple of centuries, and still continues to make. The problem is doubtless very complex, and to the question proposed a variety of offhand answers might be tendered, the value of which would depend largely upon the perspicuity of the respondent and his friendliness, or the reverse, towards the Masonic system. That the system provides occasion for social, fraternal, and, to meet the claims of the cynic, I will add, convivial intercourse amongst a number of individuals who choose to segregate themselves into a distinctive fraternity with no deeper purpose than this is, one may reasonably submit, an incredible motive to justify an organization so firmly entrenched, so robust, and associated with such personalities of eminence and character as have been formerly or still are actively connected with it. That it is an instrument for furthering practical benevolence and philanthropy, which it certainly does and does handsomely, is a similarly inadequate pretext. Masonry was not intended to be, and is not, a high-grade friendly society, and its charitable energies are merely an incident of, and not the motive for, its existence. That it is a school of morality, tending to promote peace and goodwill amongst men, which is also wholly true, again fails to suffice. For men need not join a secret society or enter into the obligations of silence required therefrom, merely to learn rudimentary ethics, which it is the common duty of the whole world to know and practice. That it is, as not infrequently alleged, an engine for promoting the mutual, temporal aggrandizement of its members to the prejudice of non-members, a cover for political intrigue, or a screen for propagating anti-religious ideas, are again idle suspicions. That political or other intrigues have in the past been conducted, as in connection with the pretensions of the Jacobites and Legitimists in both England and France in times of revolution, under the aegis of societies claiming to be Masonic, is doubtless a fact. But this, when established, proves merely that a fraud had been committed upon a system devoted to entirely different purposes. Speaking for British Masonry today, it is as innocent of such purposes as a mother's meeting, and indeed is wholly untinctured with even the political partisanship manifested, whether passively or actively, by the official churches of the land. Whilst the notorious ban of the Roman Church upon the Masonic Brotherhood as being a trespass against the exclusive spiritual and temporal rights of the former, is, upon a moment's reflection, stultified by that church's own insidious political record.